There is this thing. Do you realize do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing on. There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Welcome to the Friday edition of CKUT's Community News Program, Off the Hour. Today is March 19th. My name is Brian Jefferson, and I will be your host today. CKUT broadcasts from the unceded traditional territory of the Anishinaabeg and the Kanyekehaga, one of the founding nations of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy. I'm speaking to you from Jojage, or so-called Montreal. Stay tuned, we'll be right back.
Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
CKUT's annual funding drive runs Thursday, March 18th to Sunday, March 28th. Our programmers have been working hard at home all year, and it's time to celebrate their efforts. The theme of our first ever online drive is sowing the seeds of grassroots change, and we're asking you to support independent community media. Help us reach our goal of $25,000. Go to ckut.ca to donate today.
Sowing the seeds of change. Seeds of change. Sowing the seeds of change. Seeds of change. Sowing the seeds of change.
First, some news. The Quebec government announced this week that they're aiming for Quebecers to be able to receive the first two doses of the COVID-19 vaccine by June 24th. Premier François Legault made the announcement this Tuesday. And groups like Climate Justice Montreal and Solidarity Across Borders gathered this afternoon at the Georges-Étienne Cartier Monument on Park. They want to defund police, achieve carbon neutrality by 2030, demand a regularization of migrants, and uphold Indigenous sovereignty. And the anti-gentrification and community group Mile End Ensemble organized a read-in last Saturday to support the S.W. Welch bookstore. Participants lined up for blocks down St. Viateur, read books while they waited to buy from the bookstore. And Montrealers gathered to mark significant occasions around the city in the last week. Essential workers and the immigrant workers community met Sunday afternoon to reflect on 1 year of the pandemic. Monday was the 25th annual International Day Against Police Brutality. Demonstrators gathered at Park Metro and marched through the surrounding streets. And the death of Muriel Jumuo, March 10th at Charles Lemoyne Hospital, renewed conversations about anti-black racism and healthcare access. Though Jumuo claims in a video that her doctor knowingly gave her penicillin despite her allergy, Montrealers are remembering her and calling for justice.
Now more than ever, the simplest gestures are our best protection to fight the virus. That's why we need to continue following basic health measures, such as keeping a 2-meter distance from others, wearing a mask and washing our hands regularly. Avoid travel and non-essential trips. And if you develop symptoms, be sure to get tested promptly and follow self-isolation guidelines. See all of the measures in place at quebec.ca/coronavirus. Let's continue to protect ourselves. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
Welcome back to CKUT's Friday Off the Hour. My name is Brian Jefferson. Up first on this episode of Off the Hour, Sarah Jesmer talks to Montrealer Fabinta Niang from Senegal about the Free Senegal movement and recent protests about the upcoming presidential election.
A trigger warning that this 20-minute segment includes mentions of rape. Some citizens in Senegal have been protesting against their current administration ahead of their elections in 2024. Protesters say they want fair elections and a stronger social support system. Montreal's Senegalese community gathered earlier this month at Metro Snowdon in solidarity with demonstrations that have sometimes turned fatal.
My name is Fabinta Niang.
Niang is from Senegal and has been living in Montreal for a little less than a decade. She's one of the people using the Free Senegal hashtag on social media.
Actually, the hashtag was created 2 weeks ago on Twitter, and it actually denounced mainly the violation of democracy and liberty in Senegal, the violation of the principle of the separation of powers that we believe is not really respected right now, and the perceived corruption and inequities of the actual president, and preserve mainly also our freedom of speech.
Demonstrators say the Free Senegal movement is at its core about challenging the current president ahead of elections, President Macky Sall. But the movement is complex and controversial. A popular opposition leader named Ousmane Sonko is running what many say is a revolutionary campaign against the president. Sonko, although popular, was detained on March 3rd on a charge of public disorder. 1 month earlier, Sonko was accused of rape.
And death threats by an employee of a beauty spa. His name is Ousmane Sonko, and he came third at the latest election organized like 3 years ago. And he was later arrested for something else, for what the police call public disorder. And the problem is the majority of the population in Senegal don't believe in that rape charges. They think that Sonko is a victim of a conspiracy, so a plot, so that he won't run for president for the next election. And why people think that is because he's not the first opponent, he's the fifth opponent to have problem with justice in less than 7 years in the country. And unfortunately, they will always try to see maybe a private affair, like a charge, a rape charge, to try to put him in jail. So that's what they did to five or I think four or five other opponents. And if he's convicted, he faces up like 10 years in jail, and the next election will be in 3 years. So we think it's a trick to actually convince him.
Niang says that for many youth, Sonko represents an anti-system sentiment in a society that some say has a corrupt justice process, and he represents someone that they can relate to.
Just the fact that they were actually putting in jail every opponent is really, really bad for me. And the unemployment rate is really also high. We are currently living a social crisis right now since 5 years ago. So I was talking about hunger also. People are really poor, more and more poor. So I think it's a lot of things that right now is leading to a social crisis. And that's why people also strongly believe that what is happening right now is not just a private affair, it's a political affair. The protest didn't really start when the rape allegation was on the news, And I remember that people were actually debating whether those charges are true or not. Maybe it's a private affair, or maybe it's not related to politics.
It's reported in national newspapers that the woman at the center of this case, Adji Sarr, says this week that she's still looking for justice and is surprised by the scale of protests in the last week. Women's rights groups in Senegal, like Sigal Jagin, are reported to have said it's unacceptable for political actors to use a woman to neutralize each other.
The protest started when he was arrested for public disorder, and while he was on his way to the court, and many really believe that the government had no other reason to arrest him other than that, because the plot didn't really work, And for us, it was clearly a setup in everybody's mind. So actually, Sonko's arrest, as you said, is just the final straw, but that pushed everybody to protest against everything that is going on right now. The corrupted system, Macky Sall government, even if the demonstration was not really authorized.
There was a large demonstration in Montreal in response to these protests. What's it like for you to watch this happen from Quebec?
Okay, so when everything started, what I wanted really bad is to go back to my country for sure, because I wanted to be close to my family. But I've seen a lot of solidarity in the diaspora. For example, in Paris, there was a lot of demonstration, in New York also, here in Montreal also. And it was really good for me to see that, because I believe that maybe there is a chance that we will actually see the justice that we want. We also want actually to everything to be seen at the international point of view, you know.
She says that the majority of her family members are in Senegal.
Literally the first days, when I was seeing the police brutality, for example, during the demonstration, it was really hard, because I was just seeing and witnessing injustice in front of my eyes, and I couldn't do anything. It was really really frustrating for sure. And I remember that the first days I cried when I watched some videos, because I was actually seeing police officers shooting at innocent people. I was seeing a lot of looting, a lot of riots, and this is not the Senegal that I know, you know. It was frustrating.
In your perspective, what does a renewed Senegal look like?
Well, thing is, you have to know that Senegal is one of the most stable, democratic, and peaceful country in West Africa. That it's the first time that we have actually, as I can remember, a problem with our democratic state. It's one of the most stable and democratic country, the most peaceful one. And I cannot say that if Sanko is president, he's gonna actually be the best one, because we cannot know for sure. But I believe that he will actually bring back actually the democracy and the liberty that we always had, and that is actually leaving us right now. Normally in our presidency, the president is not actually, he cannot, for example, run for a third term. He only have like two mandates. And the thing is, our actual president, he wants to run for a third term. So it's actually anti-constitutional. And we think also that the judicial system is instrumentalized, because they're actually using like private affairs to reduce an opponent, and it's really anti-democratic for us. I didn't talk about the media censorship, but I have to talk about it, because during all those days of demonstration, there were a lot of media that were actually censured, a lot of radio that was also censured, just because they were actually showing us what is going on in the streets. And for like 3 or 4 days, I think they were actually just scripted, you know? And another thing what happened is, I'm just trying to remember, the internet was cut off. We didn't have internet for like 3 days or 4 days. We didn't know why. I cannot like just say it's the government, because it will be like a big accusation, but it's the first time that we have problem with internet in the whole country. And this is really dangerous, because in other countries in Africa, they face the same problem. They have media censorship. They have problem with the media. So the medias there are not really free, you know. We don't want to say that, but we think that right now we are going into some dictator.
How does that make you feel to say that?
Oh, I really think about it a lot before saying it, because it's a big word. It's really a big word. And we don't know what is going to happen. But right now, what is going on right now, it's really bad. And it's the first time that we actually experienced that. So we don't know where it's leading. The media censorship, the internet, that's the first time that we actually experienced all that.
Where do you get most of your news about what's going on in Senegal?
Okay, so for example, people in Senegal, because they didn't have internet, they used VPN access. They like download it, so they could actually go on Twitter, and that's how the hashtag was actually created. So they actually downloaded VPN accesses to have the Wi-Fi, and go on the internet and start the hashtag Free Senegal, because it is, for us, I think, the best way to actually alert the public opinion. So that's what we started to do, creating the hashtag and denouncing the police brutality, denouncing what is going on right now and all that stuff. So I was also going on YouTube for the first days, I think, and after that it was all cut. But we don't have any media that was actually telling us what's going on. So I just had to relate on Twitter to know what is happening in my country. Mm-hmm. Yeah, also, I couldn't call my parents at all because they don't know how to download VPN access, you know. It was mostly the youth, you know, young people that were doing that. But the parents, we didn't have, like, any news for, like, 3 or 4 days.
How are they now? How's your family?
They're really good. They're really good. They're not protesters anyway. So they were actually in security. So, yeah, they're good.
This isn't directly related, but there are some tweets that point out a crossover between the End SARS campaign, which is an anti-police brutality movement in Nigeria, and hashtag Free Senegal. What are your thoughts about that crossover?
Actually, we use End SARS just in solidarity. As you say, it's not really like related, but we just wanted to make a link with them and to denounce that that we have actually the same problem. They have experienced police brutality for, like, I think 1 or 2 years, and that's what we're having also during those demonstrations. We had a lot of police brutality. We've seen videos of police officers that was actually breaking down homes. They were, like, looking for demonstrators, they say, injuring kids, shooting at innocent people. So we actually added End SARS just to actually emphasize, for example, strategically on Twitter, so that we can be on top tweets, but also to show solidarity with them. It's not really happening in our country only, because I've seen that in Niger it's the same thing. I believe in Gabon also, Nigeria also. So yeah, there's a lot of countries, unfortunately, in Africa that are led by dictators. And yeah, I think we're just fed up at this moment.
She said she didn't attend the demonstration in Montreal, but still has a message for Quebecers.
What I want them to remember is that we are just fighting for liberty, democracy, and some principles. We're not fighting for anything else that everybody, you know, already have. So we don't want actually to be seen differently than that. So just people that actually fight for democracy and liberty. And also we try to put pressure on our government to actually talk to us, because since this past month, they just made one public speech, and it seems like they're ignoring us, you know. That's why young people are going on Instagram and Twitter, because they need to actually release their frustration. And we think that we are unheard by our own local government. So that's why I want people to know is that we are here just for our liberty, our democracy.
She says protesters are on a standby right now, waiting for negotiations on what's next.
Because we have stopped the demonstration because they were like 13 dead or something like that. And some religious people in Senegal are trying to negotiate with the government. So that's why we actually are in a standby right now. So they give us like maybe 1 week or two. And if there is no good negotiation after that, we will try again to demonstrate.
What's your favorite thing about Senegal?
Well, just one. It would be difficult to say just one. I would say the happiness that we have. We are really religious people. We are really peaceful. And those three, I think, are the most amazing things that we have, because even if you have like a lot of problems, it could be economic crisis, social crisis, political crisis, we will always stand in our ground and pray. We will pray a lot. And also we won't be triggered by that. So always happiness. And I think it's one of the most powerful thing that I've seen. Even if you go like to Paris or to New York, if you see a Senegalese man or woman, you will actually like recognize him in a bit. I think that we carry that everywhere we go. It's something that is actually really, really rooted in us.
Is there anything else about this movement that I didn't already ask you?
I think that we sum up everything. What I wanted to emphasize more is the police brutality, I think, because that's what shocked me the most. I just wanted to say that that we've seen during the protests, like outrageous scenes of police brutality, that actually is indescribable. So we denounce that 100%. So we've seen like videos of police officers breaking down into homes, injuring kids. And I think that, like, I've made a lot of tweet about that. So because it's really, 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 really important to actually talk about it.
This week on Monday was the International Day Against Police Brutality. Montrealers gathered for the 25th anniversary at Parc Metro to denounce what residents have repeatedly said is a pattern of brutality amongst this city's police force. Niang says she feels powerless when she sees brutality anywhere.
I don't know what's going on because the lack of respect that I've seen is really like, it's unbelievable. I think that people should discuss about it. It's a really serious conversation that we have about it because a lot of people are just are being killed for nothing for the most part. And that is really outrageous.
When you say that people should have a conversation about it, are you talking about Senegal or in Montreal?
Everywhere, because first of all, in Africa for sure, like in Nigeria and other countries like that, they really have problem with police brutality. We've seen that in the United States with the Black Lives Matter movement. In Canada, I've never experienced that myself, but I have some friends also that would actually point out the fact that sometimes they are being violently attacked. And yeah, so that's why I think that it's actually a global issue, not only in Senegal, but in other countries also.
Welcome back to Off the Hour on CKUT 90.3 FM. For the second segment of the hour, the shooting of eight women Tuesday night in Atlanta, Georgia, has fueled renewed conversations about anti-Asian racism in the U.S. Six of the victims were of Asian descent. The event spotlighted a rise in anti-Asian hate crimes and sentiment in the last year. This is an issue that some in Montreal have organized to address in October of 2020. Organizers say that they saw a rise in racist sentiment that coincided with the pandemic and resulted in a loss of Chinatown business and an increase in fear. Groups like the Center for Research Action on Race Relations, city councilors, and business associations asked Montreal for funding and encouraged people to come shop so that Chinatown could make it through the winter. Jimmy Chan is the president of the Chan Association. He was part of that campaign.
Good morning, everyone. What a beautiful day today. But it has been a very long 7 months and continues. At the beginning of the pandemic in Chinatown, way back in early March, I would say it was something that nobody have experienced before. As I am a parliament leader in Chinatown, I step out immediately. I said to myself, if there's something is happening that nobody knows what's going on, it's so confusing. We're hearing all kinds of things from news, from the city, from everybody talking about it, all of a sudden, our Chinatown shut down. All businesses is suffering and having not just only a difficult time, and racism started occur all over every corner in our community. My name is Jimmy Chan. I am the president of the Chan Association, the two biggest dynasty in Chinatown, way up more than 100 years ago. I want to carry on our proud heritage, our culture in Chinatown. I want to reserve our right, our Chinese people's right. Our businesses people have to stop suffering. The city, our government, have to help us. And there are many groups that come in, and we're proud. All these groups coming in because they would like to help Chinatown. They are not from here, they're from outside, but they form groups. They want to have the awareness. They wanted Chinatown to be alive. So that goal, we all aim together at the same time. So I would like to have every one of these groups united together at one. One group, one community, one voice to demonstrate our unity. We would like everybody's support around Montreal or Montreala. Come down to Chinatown. We will do lion dance to entertain you, fortune cookies program, everything. To attract everybody, go to the store, buy a little bit thing, go take out something, to go home to eat with your family, and that will help the merchants. And this is what I'm asking. For the last 2 weeks, there was a lot of vandalism going on. Windows got smashed, places got robbed. I was on global TV 2 times. I was on newspaper many times. It's awakened. Something is bad happening in our neighborhood, and we got to stop that. In order to do that, I need your help, and thank you for your help and support all the time. Because this is what I'm asking.
He says he grew up in the borough and organizes to connect with his history that's tied to these businesses.
China Association is just like one of those association in Chinatown. It goes back more than 100 years ago. The first immigrant Chinese people, at that time, it's only allowed men to come to Canada. So ever since I was a kid, I'm very interested in our culture, and also why we're here, you know? So there's a lot of story behind it, and I'm a filmmaker. So I did one short documentary in China, Finding My Root. And then I realizing there's a lot more why the Chinese people moving to Canada and North America. And at that time, go back more than 100 years ago, this Chinese man, they abandoned the family. Their loved ones, and they come to a land they don't know what it is expecting at that time. All they know about it is when the foreigners go to China, to influence the Chinese people who come to North America, say this is a golden mountain. So Chinese people love the idea, the vision of golden mountain. But unfortunately, when they show up, there's no gold, there's white gold, snow. They're all over the place. They have to work really hard to get a penny at those times. So this little Chinatown today, it brought back so many hardship and tears, and so many history behind it. So to me, at that time, it was a time for the people come to this land, form a community around the neighborhood. They have the Chan. So I heard I did research the Chan dynasty. It was the earliest dynasty in Chinatown, Montreal. So after that, they formed a Chan Association because in China, there's so many different family names, the Chan, the Li, the Wong, so many, hundreds and hundreds of the different family names. And then they want to form the family group. So therefore, the people that were the same family dynasty, they will hang out together to celebrate Chinese New Year, to talk about back home, to communicate the back home, to mail, and at that time. So I grew up in that association when I was a kid, and I was an errand boy. So whatever they want me to do, I do it for the older people at the time. So I'm really happy. I love them, and they love me. We all respect, and now you go back like 17 years ago, they nominated me as a president. Yeah, this is why all the association in the Chinese community are formed because of that reason. Now, I have a vision in my mind for a long time now, especially now during the COVID-19 pandemic since the beginning of the year, March. I would like to bring all community together, all different association together, all the group that wanted to help and support Chinatown come together. Right now, we're suffering two different groups, okay, and too many voices. I'm very proud and happy the young people wanted to help also. They're very educated, professional, but come together. So we have to form a committee. One community, one voice. So this is my vision. This is my hope that could happen. So all the association will come together and join the committee. The more people, the stronger the vision will be, the stronger voice will be. My own feeling right now, we have to be united in order to be stronger, to bring back, to maintain our culture, of course, to maintain our heritage, and also have a bigger voice to ask for the government for help. The last 6 months, obviously this 7 months coming up, when you walk around La Cuchichea, just that area, and also Sinaloa, when you see those stores locked up, not opening, means they are planning to close down. On the weekend, like beautiful day today, this place will be packed of people. And every weekend, I have a lion dance team. You've seen lion dance before, right? Yeah, the lion dance team. Every weekend, we have performances in this area. Oh, I attracted so many people. We have martial art performances. We have a lot of things. The festival every month through the summertime. Because of COVID-19, the whole year is nothing happening in Chinatown. Okay? Now, all the big restaurants, they all depend on the festival, the banquet, the wedding, everything all canceled out. So the thing is that the situation right now is not very positive. I'm afraid to say when COVID-19 is over, Chinatown will have to be rebuilt. But I don't want that rebuilding. I want the main thing is Chinatown. The way before COVID-19, maintain it, yes, of course, less people, the government tell people to stay home, that's understandable. That's not a problem for the people, for the merchant. The problem is people are afraid to come to Chinatown. They're afraid to get the virus from Chinatown. It's crazy. At one time, I have the mayors and some of the politicians come down walking hand in hand in Chinatown to tell people to have confidence because there's nothing wrong with this little town. So, but if, I don't know why the people in the mind, they think Chinatown, the pandemic, the COVID-19 is from Asian. Like, it's not. Don't bring the politics, you know, to mix with our decent citizen. We're trying to make a living just like everybody else, you know. And so this is a very mixed feeling that I have. I don't want to see Chinatown disappear. And we need funding from the government to help us out, to help all the merchants. But they do have to pay rent, have to pay tax and things like that. And eventually, I will have to talk to the government. You know, see if they could to be easy on the taxation, you know, not to reinforce them, to say you got to pay now, you know. So the thing is we have to treat this matter right now, not later. And so that's the reason why the last few months that I stepped in the voice out to encourage people to speak up. You have a problem, don't get stressed, talk to me about it. I represent Chinese community, talk to me about it. Then I would try to do something. So I never really been on the news media so much in my life. The last few weeks, it's like I was constantly out there and on Facebook and everything, which is helping the awareness and also the awakening of some of the people that educate them to learn more about our culture, to learn more about we are good. We are just like everybody else. We are afraid too for the virus. It's not something that's going to stop up to operate Chinatown. Otherwise, Chinatown would be finished by now. Chinatown would be rise again, you know. But before that, we have to maintain all the merchants have the faith and courage to continue the business, even though that's not enough. But encouraging them, you know.
A march and vigil are planned for Sunday to denounce anti-Asian racism in Montreal and in other cities. Demonstrators will gather after marching near Chinatown at Park Sun Yat-sen to remember the victims. And lastly, advocacy group Solidarity Across Borders, or SAB, has been organizing repeatedly in the last few weeks in support of people detained in Canada's immigration holding facility in Laval. Detainees have tested positive for COVID-19 and say they're living in unsanitary conditions. Marlon is a detainee using a pseudonym. SAB shared his testimony about living with COVID. SAB rallied this week because they say Marlon was facing imminent deportation. He has since been deported. Here's Marlon on February 22nd.
When
I first caught COVID, I had high fever and was coughing a lot and spitting out blood. It was difficult to breathe through the mask. When I would go alert the doctor, the prison staff took my temperature and gave me Tylenol and said my condition was not serious. So far, I've been isolated for 8 days. There is no ventilation. These rooms are completely airtight except for air conditioning and heating. It is very cold in the room where I am now. On the bed, on the floor underneath, there is a lot of spit from the former occupants. I sleep on the floor because the bed has traces of saliva on it that is not hygienic. I've been on a hunger strike for 8 days today. I've only had water for 2 days out of 8 days. We are paying double with COVID and detention. I am demanding that we be released and that we are given the opportunity to be with our families, because many of us have families on the outside. I ask, please, that we be given the chance to be with our families. Solidarity Across Borders held a joint press conference on these conditions last month.
This is activist and author Robin Maynard.
The abolition of carceral systems, allocating instead funds towards health, housing, and transportation. This is part of a broader sea change across North American society after the reckoning of the summer, where we saw a demand from across the public against racial injustice. The release of detainees and status for all is integral to this struggle. What's happening today, the COVID-19 outbreak and the hunger strike, is harm of impoverished and racialized people. This is preventable, and we know that release saves lives, and state officials have the choice to do so or to fail to do so. This is a life or death question, and releasing detainees is crucial in the name of public health, in the name of racial justice, particularly in a country that supposedly is modeled after human rights. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Robin. Merci beaucoup, Robin. Nous allons maintenant céder la parole à Abdou, qui est ancien détenu au centre de détention de Laval et participant aux grèves de la faim en 2020. Next, we'll hear from Abdou, who's a former detainee at the Immigration Detention Center and who also participated in the hunger strike in 2020.
Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour tout le monde, et merci, merci de me donner l'opportunité d'apporter mon soutien. Je m'appelle Abdoul, je suis un ancien détenu du centre de détention de Laval et j'ai passé là-bas, j'étais là-bas au mois de mars, au début de la pandémie. Et après avoir observé des manquements et dans les mesures prises par les agents frontaliers, et aussi surtout après avoir remarqué de l'impossibilité de pouvoir respecter les gestes barrières là-bas, nous avions décidé de faire la grève de la faim pour pouvoir dénoncer ces conditions dans lesquelles nous étions traités. Je m'excuse, ça me fait un peu froid dans le dos d'avoir entendu ces déclarations d'actuels détenus, parce que c'est exactement ce que nous vivions. Ça me fait des flashbacks et ça me rend compte que la situation n'a pas changé du tout. Et c'est ce qui est vraiment choquant et très déplorable. Donc nous avions décidé de faire la grève de la faim parce que à cause de toutes ces conditions et surtout parce que nous savions que c'était une question de temps avant que le virus ne s'introduise dans la prison à cause de comment ça se passait. Donc c'est vrai que nous avions été libérés Mais le déroulement des choses nous a donné raison parce que peu de temps après, on a entendu parler de gars qui étaient affectés. Et à un moment donné, moi-même, personnellement, je pensais que c'était terminé tout ça parce qu'ils avaient annoncé la suspension des déportations. Donc, je suis confus. Je ne sais pas pourquoi ces gens ils sont encore détenus là-bas. Et aussi, je voudrais faire une remarque sur quelque chose que j'ai vécu là-bas, que nous tous, on a vécu là-bas en tant que détenus et qui n'est pas vraiment... que je n'ai pas eu l'occasion d'en parler. C'est vraiment la condition de l'air aussi, de l'air ambiant. L'aération. En étant à l'intérieur, on peut voir les sorties d'aération qui sont vraiment encastrées par la poussière. Et que chaque matin, quand on se réveille, dès le premier jour, on se réveille avec un mal de la gorge parce qu'il y a tellement de poussière dans l'air. Tous les gardes, ils circulent avec des bouteilles d'eau. Et c'est après qu'on a trouvé la technique de prendre de la vaseline et de la mettre dans nos narines pour pouvoir respirer la nuit et que le matin, qu'on pourra se réveiller sans mal de gorge. Donc, je suis vraiment très, très choqué et puis ça me rend vraiment mal de savoir que les gens ils souffrent déjà du Covid et puis en plus de cette situation-là et qui ne peuvent même pas respirer normalement. Donc, c'est vraiment atroce ce genre de c'est cette détention. Je voudrais réaffirmer que le centre de détention, en connaissance de cause, n'est pas un endroit propice à la détention, surtout pas en ces moments-là de pandémie. Et aussi, je voudrais souligner que ces gens, ils ont que ça, cette campagne de dénonciation pour que les gens ils sachent ce qui se passe là-bas. Parce que dès les premiers instants, ils sont dépossédés de tout. Ils n'ont pas de téléphone, ils n'ont rien du tout. Et sans information, oui, on est dans le désarroi le plus total. On ne sait pas ce qui va se passer, on ne sait pas qui peut aider. Et c'était vraiment un miracle de rencontrer Solidarité sans frontières qui était là pour nous supporter, nous les détenus. Et si ce n'était pas eux, ça aurait été beaucoup, beaucoup pire et personne n'aurait pu entendre tous ces cris-là. Donc, moi, je félicite cette action de dénonciation et puis je voudrais même que ça soit plus poussé qu'on en parle à toute personne ou tout organisme qui s'acquiert ou bien qui s'occupe des droits de l'homme, que vraiment qu'ils sachent que ce qui se passe là-bas, c'est vraiment, vraiment inacceptable et que ces gens, ils souffrent beaucoup. C'était tout. Et puis, merci de m'avoir écouté.
Merci beaucoup, Abdul. Thank you so much, Abdul. Nous allons maintenant entendre un témoignage de Sheena Hosko, qui est membre du collectif anticarcéral. Next, we're going to hear from Sheena Hosko, who's a member of the anticarceral group.
Thanks to everyone for being here in solidarity with those in Laval who are being detained and also those who are striking. As Amy said, my name is Sheena. I'm with anticarceral group. In so-called Canada and Quebec, the carceral systems are intertwined and overlapping, and I'd like to talk about that. We're here in Chitrague, Muniang, Montreal, on stolen Indigenous land. Systems of confinement, including prisons, have been essential to colonial genocide and racial slavery. 30% of people inside federal institutions are Indigenous, with higher numbers in provincial joints, especially in the prairies. 10% of people in federal institutions are Black, with higher numbers in provincial institutions. For now, I want to focus on the area in Laval where the Migrant Detention Center is, on the street called Monte-Saint-François. Federal Training Center Medium, just down the road from the detention center, is a federal prison for men and has been in lockdown in their cells for 3 weeks due to coronavirus. People held in FTC minimum work in the Immigration Detention Center for around $30 a week, which is the standard rate of pay when you're a federal prisoner. FTC Medium, across the street from the detention center, is the prison hardest hit by coronavirus in Quebec, with 161 people infected and one death. FTC Medium has specific wings reserved for Inuit people, as well as people living with chronic mental illness. As we know, the government is building a new immigration detention center down the street from the old one, slated to open this year. Across the street from this new center is Leclerc, a provincial prison for women. Many people held in prison grew up or live in poverty and are criminalized because of the alternative economies in which they participate as a means of survival. Some have committed acts of violence, the root causes of which are not addressed by incarceration, and that, as we know, are perpetuated by the violence of the penal system itself. Many people living with mental illness end up locked up in prison, where increased isolation and lack of health care exasperate mental health struggles. During the COVID-19 pandemic, prisoners have had their visits with people on the outside suspended and have often been confined to their cells for weeks and months at a time. As of February 18th, 2021, there were at least 6,000 cases, so that's 4,669 prisoners, 1,334 staff and six contractors, cases of coronavirus linked to prisons in Canada. Five federal prisoners, one Quebec prisoner, and one Albertan guard have died. There have been recent hunger strikes at Barton and Maplehurst institutions, with uprisings in Saskatchewan in the early new year by prisoners on the inside. People in Bordeaux Prison on the island of Montreal are in the midst of an outbreak as well, with over 100 people infected. People have been on 24-hour lockdown since January 24th. And lastly, directly across the street from Bordeaux is one of the CHSLDs hardest hit by COVID-19 in the province. It's literally right in front of the prison. Notre Dame de la Merci had 100 deaths in the first wave. Prisons, detention centers, long-term care facilities, and psychiatric institutions are facilities where our governments have decided to put people who are disposable. No one is disposable, and this is why freeing them all and prison abolition is a necessity.
Merci beaucoup, Sheena. Thank you so much, Sheena. Nous allons maintenant entendre une présentation de Christian Ayala, qui est membre du Comité pour les droits humains en Amérique latine. Next, we'll hear from Christina Ayala, who is a member of CEDAL.
Bonjour à toutes et à tous. Je vais vous faire part de la déclaration du CEDAL. En tant qu'organisation de solidarité internationale, le CEDAL est navré de constater les graves violations des droits humains commises par le gouvernement du Canada envers les personnes migrantes dans la prison à Laval. C'est déplorable qu'au cours des dernières années, des personnes migrantes détenues ont dû faire recours à plusieurs reprises en grève de la faim pour se faire entendre, pour faire respecter leurs droits fondamentaux à la santé et à la dignité. Aujourd'hui, nous sommes présentes afin de nous joindre à l'appel pour exiger leur libération. Depuis des années, des groupes de la société civile dénoncent le caractère répressif, discriminatoire et raciste des politiques d'immigration canadienne. Pendant la pandémie, les scénarios d'injustice et d'exploitation s'exacerbaient, car la plupart des services essentiels sont assurés par des personnes n'ayant pas un statut migratoire ou bien un statut précaire, soit dans les domaines de l'alimentation, dans les entrepôts, des soins de personnes âgées ou même dans des établissements étatiques de santé. Et c'est sans accès à la santé et à des prestations sociales. Cette situation est venue s'aggraver avec les couvre-feux qui exposent à la déportation des personnes migrantes sans statut et de se trouver dans un centre de détention. Le Canada est dénoncé à travers le monde pour les pillages et les saccages de territoires où ce projet de développement s'installe. Ce projet prend la forme de méga-barrages hydroélectriques, des mines, d'industries forestières et des complexes touristiques qui viennent de la main avec l'augmentation de la militarisation des territoires. De nombreux rapports établissent des liens directs entre les entreprises canadiennes installées sur un territoire et les violations des droits humains commises contre les populations locales, particulièrement à l'encontre des femmes. On compte de nombreux cas d'assassinats, de massacres, de viols et de criminalisation ayant lieu dans des contextes de conflits causés par l'extractivisme canadien et ceux de l'Océanie jusqu'en Amérique latine, passant par l'Afrique. Partout dans le monde, les entreprises extractives canadiennes alimentent et appuient également des gouvernements illégitimes et répressifs qui, en échange, mettent à leur disposition leurs ressources et leurs territoires sans prendre en considération les gens qui vivent. La présence des forces armées privées et publiques sur ces territoires est souvent renforcée pour protéger les investissements canadiens, aggravant les conditions de violence, instabilité politique, de précarité d'exploitation de la force de travail de la population. Ainsi, plusieurs se voient forcés de quitter leur territoire et certaines de ces personnes entament des périples extrêmement difficiles pour arriver au Canada. Ainsi, le modèle extractif canadien ne se contente pas de saccager leur territoire, sinon aussi d'extraire leur force de travail à travers des politiques d'immigration axées sur les besoins du marché et des programmes de travail temporaire qui les réduisent en marchandises, en ressources exploitées sans aucun droit en territoire canadien. Dans ces dalles, nous nous unissons aux organisations et collectives qui contestent le système de détention de personnes migrantes au Canada et nous exprimons notre solidarité avec la grève de l'AMFA entamée pour la libération des personnes migrantes en centre de détention à Laval. Nous nous joignons également aux actions et revendications de différents groupes au cours de la dernière année qui ont levé la voix pour exiger un programme de régularisation pour toutes et tous. Merci.
Merci beaucoup, Christina. Thank you so much, Christina. Finally, we'll hear from Mustafa Hanawi from the Immigrant Workers Center. Soyez le bienvenu à Mustafa Hanawi du Centre des Travailleurs et Travailleuses Immigrants.
Thank you very much, Amy, and thank you to Solidarity Across Borders for organizing this press conference on such a short notice, but with the extreme urgency that this deserves at this current moment. And the Immigrant Workers Center is an organization which defends the rights and dignity of all immigrant and migrants, whether it be in the workplace or for immigration justice. And so this hunger strike unfortunately continues to expose the constant punishment that precarious migrants are facing under this pandemic. That what, to echo what Sheena had said, that they are completely made to be disposable, that they're not guardian angels, and that there's no pretense of guardian angels. There's no pretense now of the kind of diversity that Robin spoke about before. And it began before even they got to the detention center, right? That these people, unfortunately, in their workplace were the ones who were exposed to COVID. And then with the curfew and the punishment that precarious migrants face because of the fear of being deported or the fear of being detained, unfortunately becomes a scary reality. Even though CBSA had said that detention would become, in their press release in November, would become the last resort, it's clear that CBSA has no intention to make it the last resort. And that unfortunately, what detention has become now has become, unfortunately, a life and death matter for migrants. That it's no longer to the point where they're going to be in detention. And the question about detention also is that these migrants who are in detention aren't going to be there for a day or for a week, because unfortunately, there is no rule of law when it comes to the detention of migrants. Migrants can be there for months, they can be there for years, and it is completely arbitrary. And as a result, they're going to be exposed, if not today, if not this week, then the following month or the month after that. It has become a form of public health apartheid that migrants, especially undocumented migrants, are facing without any access to any livelihood, with the constant fear of detention. Even if there are suspensions of deportations, the constant fear of deportation, and now this, and the heroic actions that people are taking, I mean, are as a result of the desperation that people face, and that there's been no real discussion about regularization, just the ending of detention completely for migrants, that there's been no system to put in place to protect, the rights of precarious immigrants and migrants in detention or beyond detention. And this really shows how low and to the level of how disposable people have become. that serious illness and death is acceptable for those who are living without status. And so in this regard, the Immigrant Workers Center wish to express our solidarity with those on hunger strike and continue to call for an end to the detention, but also to demand status for all, right? That there is no, that there's no necessary reason for detention because everybody should be here with status.
Tomorrow, this group will gather outside the walls of the Laval Immigration Holding Center in support of those inside. I'm Sarah Jesmer, and you are listening to CKUT 90.3 FM.
Vaccination against COVID-19 is now underway for priority groups. Visit quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to follow the vaccination sequence planned for your area and book your appointment online. If necessary, you can also call 1-877-644-4545. Once you've been vaccinated, it's important to continue to protect yourself by following the basic health guidelines. The vaccine, a safe way to protect ourselves. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
CKUT Radio.
Radio. Sound waves in the air.
CKUT.
Montreal, Canada.
CKUT.
Welcome back to CKUT. I'm Brian Jefferson, and here's some news that you can use. Several protests are taking place around the city. Solidarity Across Borders is rallying tomorrow outside the Immigration Holding Center in Laval to denounce this prison system and demand a release of all detainees. At least 859 total detainees in Quebec's federal and provincial prisons have tested positive for COVID over the last year. The Laval rally is Saturday at noon. And the Progressive Chinese of Montreal and the sex worker support group Stella are partnering to demonstrate in response to recent shootings in Atlanta that have been deemed as hate crime against Asian communities. Protesters will gather at Cabot Square on Monday at 1, then march to a vigil at Park Sun Yat-sen to commemorate the victims. The protest starts at 1 p.m. on Monday at Cabot Square. And if you're over the age of 65 and want to get vaccinated, you can make an appointment online. That's at quebec.ca/COVID-vaccine to learn how. And QPIRG McGill's annual Culture Shock Festival ends tonight with a free workshop on the commodification of Asian cultures. You can find more information at qpirgmcgill.org. And in holidays, Women's History Month continues throughout March. And Nowruz, or Persian New Year, will be March 21st. And yesterday marked the 1 year of programmers running CKUT from home. We're honoring the occasion with a funding drive that was postponed last year because of the virus. Because we're a community station, your support means more than ever. Our team here at Off the Hour has a goal of raising $100. You can call 514-448-4041 to speak to studio staff about donating. You can also mail a check to CKUT or do it online at ckut.ca. We thank you in advance. We couldn't do this without you.
There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing.
And that concludes this Friday's edition of Off the Hour, produced by Montreal's Community News Collective. The team includes myself, Brian Jefferson, Alice Wu, Grace Cobbold, Kate Addison, and Sarah Jesmer. For more information on anything you heard tonight, or if you would like to participate or support news produced by and for the Montreal community, please reach out by email to newsintern@ckut.ca. We're also on Instagram at Off the Hour, or connect with us on Facebook. Just search Off the Hour. Stay tuned for Cafe coming up next.
Time to play.
CKUT is having a funding drive. CKUT is your community radio supporting events, culture, and shows, and playing the music you wouldn't even know you liked unless you heard it here. Give us a call, 514-907-9424, and give what you can.
Bonjour à tous, ici Ève Laurence au micro pour Café, votre émission d'art et culture du vendredi. Cette semaine, on a une émission toute en musique mixée par Julie et moi, alias Lésion, je le dis, au cas où vous ayez envie de nous suivre sur Facebook, de la musique bien rythmée pour satisfaire nos envies de danser. Mais cette semaine aussi, c'est une émission bien spéciale parce que c'est la campagne de financement annuel de CKUT, notre radio communautaire, notre radio indépendante préférée, notre radio diversifiée, pluraliste, libre, aux valeurs libertaires même, je dirais, qui héberge une panoplie d'émissions avec une tonne de thématiques surprenantes. C'est une radio qui est portée par des voix, par des langues multiples, une radio qui travaille fort pour mettre en lumière des communautés, des enjeux, de la musique à la marge. CKUT, c'est une radio précieuse à Montréal qui vit grâce au support de sa communauté. Alors, si vous êtes en onde présentement avec nous, on vous encourage fortement à donner un petit coup de pouce à notre radio. Vous pouvez faire ça en ligne au CKUT.ca ou bien en envoyant un bon vieux chèque à l'adresse de CKUT au 3647 University,